Blog Talk Radio.
Everybody, I gotta tell you up front, not that you could even see me right now, I haven't shaved since Columbus came over. I mean, I look ridiculous. I look like somebody put a squirrel on my face or something. And it's not like I'm not one of those guys who can grow a manly beard where they grow it and it's like, oh, that actually looks fine. Yeah, it's like the old school little kid, teenager, like patchiness. Randomly, some spots on the face are like, how about we don't grow hair? How about that? So, feeling a little ridiculous in terms of looks, but that's all right. No big deal. We're here to talk politics. Who gives a fuck what we look like? A lot of stuff to talk about. All right, so Bernie Sanders stepped up his attacks on Hillary Clinton here ahead of the California primary. You know, I have an interesting criticism of this. Not that he shouldn't have done it, but kind of that he should have done it earlier, and how he categorized this kind of an attack is interesting to me. I mean, I would call it substance full, but he disagrees, and he kind of bit his tongue in the past. We're also going to get Bernie's thoughts on his Bernie or Bust movement. That's really interesting. And then later on in the show, obviously, we have the passing of the great Muhammad Ali. We have to talk about him, not just from, I guess certain parts of his legacy, not that they've been suppressed, but they haven't been talked about as much. And he was a fantastic political activist, and he was so much more than just a boxer. So we're going to do our own little eulogy, I guess you could say, of him here. There's a lot of stuff a lot of facts on him that are really fascinating. And then also later on in the show, we have the Young Turks. Cenk Uygur went on reliable sources on CNN. I can't believe CNN allowed him on. And, yeah, you could see why they usually don't have him on. Because poor Brian Stelter. He got circles ran around him. Poor guy. And a whole bunch of other stuff, too, including apparently atheists only exist in America and Europe. Who knew? All you atheists who are outside of that context, you're actually not real. You're a figment of your own imagination. And actually, by the way, before I continue here, I got to do a quick shout-out, and this is super important to the Secular Talk family here, but I want to wish a happy birthday to Draven. His birthday was on June 3rd. He's 10 years old. This is one of Lilith's kids, and also Dante, whose birthday was May 19th, which was also not that long ago. He's 12 years old. I'm not kidding when I say that these kids may be future presidents of the United States of America, because at that ripe age, they've already been listening to Secular Talk for years. So, number one, I am polluting the minds of the youths all across America. Number two, that's awesome. And these are some future thought leaders. So, happy birthday, guys. All right, let's go ahead and get started here, and let's kick it off with some Bernie Sanders stuff, specifically his new-ish line of attack on Hillary Clinton. Bernie Sanders finally decided to step up his attacks on Hillary Clinton here, and he really nailed her on an important issue. So he was on CNN, and Jake Tapper said the following: "You have not been critical of the Clinton Foundation, but there are those who say that there's something inherently wrong with an American charity, especially one with ties to a Secretary of State, taking money from the Saudis and other foreign governments that don't represent our values. Is that a fair criticism?" So it took Jake Tapper basically teeing it up for him and giving him a pat on the back for him to say the following, quote, "Yes, it is. It is. I mean, I have tried to run an issues-oriented campaign on issues of importance to the working people. But if you ask me about the Clinton Foundation, do I have a problem when a sitting Secretary of State and a foundation run by her husband collects many millions of dollars from foreign governments which are dictatorships? You don't have a lot of civil liberties or democratic rights in Saudi Arabia. You don't have a lot of respect there for opposition points of view. for gay rights, for women's rights. Yes, I do have a problem with that. Yes, I do. And then Jake Tapper says, you think it creates an appearance of conflict of interest? Bernie says, I do. I do. So, I don't know why he didn't hammer away on this sooner. Now, obviously, Bernie has brought up the issue of money in politics more than anybody else. And when he brings it up in the context of campaign contributions. This is a whole nother dimension to money in politics and corruption and legalized bribery. And it's actually specific to the Clintons. But he didn't really go there. Only when Jake Tapper kind of patted him on the back and teed it up and said, what do you think of the Clinton Foundation? Did he say, well, obviously something's wrong with that. So my response to Bernie would be, dude, the reason why you should have brought it up earlier is the reason why you say you didn't bring it up, which is, he argues, hey, I'm running an issues-oriented campaign for working class people. That's the whole point of my campaign. Yeah, that's exactly why you have to bring up the Clinton Foundation. That's exactly why you have to hammer away at that. And that's exactly why you have to highlight it and educate the American people on exactly what's wrong with it. Because a lot of people just don't know. They hear Clinton Foundation and they go, oh, I'm sure they are doing wonderful charity everywhere around the world, and that is the end of the story. Well, no, as the International Business Times stories that they broke not that long ago, we learned that, just like they laid out here, Saudi Arabia would give money to the Clinton Foundation, tremendous amounts of money to the Clinton Foundation, and then lo and behold, look at that, all of the business that was in front of the Secretary of State, Hillary Clinton, for weapons deals got approved. I wonder if there was a connection there. Now, it's a separate issue if there's actually a quid pro quo, where they say, I will give you money, you will give me weapons. And that's one of the questions about her email scandal. Oh, all these emails were deleted. What was in those emails? Well, there could be quid pro quos about, I'll give the Clinton Foundation X amount of money, you do this favor for me, and that would be totally illegal. But it's a separate question if there is a quid pro quo. But either way, this is the dynamics of money in politics. Nobody's given millions of dollars and thinking, I am going to give this out of the kindness of my heart. Really, the fucking Saudi government out of the kindness of their heart. These assholes kill people for sorcery and witchcraft. They say all atheists are terrorists. You gonna trust these people? Yeah, oh, charitable giving. You want to know how you can do charity? Stop fucking beheading people in your country. How about that? So, no, you shouldn't trust them. You shouldn't trust them in any way. And the thing about the Clintons that's so nefarious is you have all these different avenues that they've gotten money over the years. So with a regular politician, you get money to their campaign, and you get money to their super PAC. And that's largely it. Now, that's still massively corrupt. Make no mistake about it. But with the Clintons, you get the super PAC, you get the campaign, you get individual donations in terms of speeches, and you get the Clinton Foundation. That's four ways of legally getting money and then doing legal bribes and corruption. And they actually calculated how much money the Clintons have raised in their entire lives and their entire careers here. Over $3 billion. Over $100 million just from personal speeches. That's the money that goes directly into the pocket. So if you don't think they're beholden to elites around the world and corporations around the world and even foreign governments in some respects in terms of getting them weapons deals, you're crazy. And remember, what did Saudi Arabia do with the weapons deals that were approved by Hillary Clinton? They massacred civilians in Yemen, including children and women. This is one of the main reasons why so many people roll their eyes when Hillary Clinton, you know, uses the language of feminism and identity politics. They go, well, wait a second, look at what you did. You can say the right words. Oh, look, you're making the right noises with your mouth on the issue of feminism or whatever issue. You're blowing up women in Yemen, you're approving deals, weapons deals, that go to a government that has the same philosophy as ISIS, and then they're attacking civilians. And what do you do? They're even using cluster bombs, which are illegal under international law. And what does the U.S. do? When it's our ally and they use cluster bombs, I don't care. They've also attacked schools for the blind. They've attacked hospitals. The whole point is to kill civilians. You know, and I haven't even brought up, we're just talking about the Saudi weapons deal. What about with Israel as well? She loves Netanyahu. Well, look at Netanyahu's recent slaughter fest in Gaza, where he killed up to 80% civilians, and Hillary Clinton couldn't bring herself to condemn it. Unbelievable. Unbelievable. So, Bernie, you should bring this up because it is issues-oriented. because the existence of this foundation and what has happened as a result of it makes it so that Hillary Clinton does the bidding of her donors and foreign governments and snubs the constituents. And that's the number one problem with her. Is anybody who's followed her record closely knows she's not going to represent you. She's not going to represent regular people. If she just so happens to stumble across a couple issues where she does represent you, it's to throw you a fucking bone so that she continue to do the corruption behind the scenes. So, yes, Bernie should bring this up. He should bring it up more. And rest assured, it is totally issues-focused. It's as issues-focused as you could possibly get. Okay. Now we go to Bernie weighing in on his own Bernie or Bust movement. Let me take a little sip of my drink first. Cleanse the palate. You know what I'm saying? Actually, that's not cleansing the palate, right? Don't you have to eat something to cleanse the palate? I don't know. Who knows? I'm not going to debate cleanse the palate with you guys now. I say debate like you're responding. God damn it, I said I don't want to debate it. All right. I got a little clip for you on this one, too. Every time I look in the monitor and I see the squirrels on my face, it looks ridiculous. This might be the longest my facial hair has ever been on secular talk. Manchild. Hashtag manchild. I say that, and then some of you might actually tweet something with hashtag manchild. Bernie Sanders weighed in on the Bernie or Bust movement. Let's watch.
Bernie or Bust, the Bernie or Bust movement. These are people who say, if you're not the nominee, that's it. They're out of the process. What is your message to those people? Obviously, you want their support and you want to be the nominee.
Right.
But is Bernie or Bust a palatable position?
Well, I think to answer your question, the idea that I can snap my fingers and have millions of supporters kind of march in line, that is not what our effort is about. I think if I am not the nominee, and we're going to fight to become the nominee, it is Secretary Clinton's job to explain to those people why she should get their support. And that means she's going to have to address their needs. Secretary Clinton is going to have to make the convincing argument to them that how could it be that she's getting huge amounts of money from Wall Street and other powerful special interests, and she is going to stand up and fight for them.
But no matter what, are you going to work hard to make sure that Donald Trump loses and the Democratic candidate, whether it's you or her, wins?
Yes.
So at the end there, if you're listening on the live show, I know it kind of cut out there, but he says yes to the last question where Jake Tapper says, okay, but if it comes down to just preventing Donald Trump from getting elected, will you do that? He said yes, yes. So I actually agree with every aspect of what he said there. So first of all, he makes clear, look, my movement is not necessarily about me. It's about my philosophy, and it's about my policy positions. So if people in that movement are unwilling or unable to support Hillary Clinton, you can't blame me. You can't blame them. You have to put that on Hillary Clinton because it's up to her to make a convincing argument to say, hey, here's why you have to vote for me. I could not tell you how much I agree with that. Because this entire time, people have been trying to put it on him or trying to put it on the Bernie or Bust people and basically saying, get the fucking line. Well, that's a silly way of viewing it. I mean, there was a great tweet about this. I wish I could give credit to the person who said it. But the gist of it was this debate is framed as if Democratic politicians can't fail the people. Only the people can fail the Democratic politician. That's such a great way of putting it because the idea is you never put the blame on the shittiness of the Democratic candidate and how right-wing they are and how corrupt they are and how interventionist they are. It always comes down to, but you're really going to fall in line, right? And if you don't fall in line, you have failed our great candidate. The candidate has not failed you. No, sometimes it's the other fucking way around. Sometimes it's the candidate who's failing the people, and that's utterly apparent. So for everybody in Bernie or Bust, you can't blame them. They're the ones who understand democracy. If you're berating the people in Bernie or Bust as opposed to Hillary Clinton for not being a shitty candidate, you don't understand democracy. You're supposed to want the candidate to be good, not the voters to fall in line and suck it up because she's shitty. I mean, that's basically the gist of it. But then I also do agree with him at the end there. So there's, I think, a really small percentage of the Bernie or Bust people who say, not only will I not vote for Hillary, I will vote for Donald Trump in the general election. I don't know what percentage it is, but it's enough for me to comment on it here. I think it's a small percentage, but I think it exists. And even Bernie saying there at the end, yeah, no, my number one thing will be don't get Donald Trump elected if it gets to that point. I also agree with that aspect of it. And the thing is, like, I get it. Don't get me wrong. There are some people, and their argument is, well, Hillary is business as usual. She is the establishment. And Donald Trump sometimes talks about money in politics and talks about how, you know, there's corruption. And when he was in the Republican debate on the stage, he points at everybody like, Jeb Bush, a puppet of this donor, Marco Rubio, a puppet of that donor. And people in the Democratic establishment don't understand how big of an issue that is to progressives and liberals, how that's our number one issue when we really understand that money in politics is the cancer that destroys, all of our politics and all the policy goals that we want. So when you have a Republican who's making those arguments, there are a lot of liberals and progressives who are willing to overlook everything else about Trump because, hey, he might actually do something on that issue. So I get the appeal and I get the argument of people who say, fuck it, I'll go for Trump in the general. But I'm here to tell you, and I think Bernie would tell you the same thing, he's fucking lying to you. So, and you might, well, how do you know? I know based on everything he's ever said and everything he's ever done, he's just a liar. We covered the story on Friday, about Trump University and how it was just the most obvious scam in the world. And the details of it are almost mind-blowing, how he thought he could get away with something like that. It's fraud. He just absolutely committed fraud. The issue with veterans' donations, how he said he raised $6 million for veterans. He didn't. When there was an expose on it and the media was like, you didn't raise the money. That day that the expose came out, he writes the checks and sends them out and goes, what do you mean? See, I wrote the checks. No, you weren't going to do it. And then they fucking called you out on it. And then you did it at the last second. So it's stuff like this, man. It's the fact that he contradicts himself every 8 seconds on every policy. He's been on every side of the issue. So, and then he literally is taking money. So he says, I'm not going to take money from big money interests. One of the guys who he ripped Jeb Bush for taking money from, specifically, that guy is now leading his fundraising efforts. So he's a hypocrite beyond explanation. Not only is he taking money from big money people, he's taking money from the same big money people that just bought Jeb that he was screaming about. So you cannot believe him. He's full of shit. And he knows the buttons to push to try to get people riled up and get people on his side. So you cannot believe him when he says that, and this is all stuff that Bernie would agree with also. So what's my position on this? I've described this before. I went on TYT the night of the New York election and when Bernie lost, and we had this long discussion, long debate about Bernie or bust. Jimmy Dore was full Bernie or bust. Jenk was not Bernie or bust. John Iadarola was not Bernie or bust. I was 50% Bernie or bust, and I'm not sure exactly where Anna is. I thought at the time she was about 50% Bernie or bust too. And so my position would be as follows. If you're in a state that is 100% going to go to either the Democrat or the Republican, so a deep red state or a deep blue state, you don't have to vote for Hillary Clinton. Relax, breathe. You're good. You don't have to vote for her. So, for example, what am I going to do? I'm going to go and either write in Bernie's name, or I'm going to go and I'm going to vote for Jill Stein. Simple as that, since I'm in New York. Now, having said that, if I was in Florida, if I was in Ohio, if I was in a swing state, I would vote for Hillary Clinton because I agree with Bernie Sanders when he says thing number one is keeping Donald Trump out of office. Now, I would do that knowing that I am literally voting for the lesser of two evils. So I would admit that she's evil. I will continue to admit all her flaws and her faults and attack her relentlessly. But I would do that because she is the lesser of two evils. And just so you more fully understand exactly why this is my position, and honestly, I'd venture to say this is why this is Bernie Sanders' position too. I mean, Donald Trump really is a guy who I do not trust with an army. I don't. I don't trust him with an army. That's not to say I trust Hillary Clinton with an army, but I trust her with an army more than I trust Donald Trump with an army. I trust her with the nuclear codes more than I trust Donald Trump with the nuclear codes. I trust Donald Trump with the nuclear codes and an army 0%. I might trust Hillary 8% with it, but that's 8% more than what I trust Donald Trump with it. You understand what I'm saying? I also cannot get over the fact that Donald Trump said, I will purposefully kill civilians in the Middle East. I will murder the families of ISIS. And he said it confidently. It's like he had never thought about it and even considered that that's massively immoral and he's a terrorist if he does that. Didn't even – just out of his mind, just out of his mind. So I can't in good faith say I don't care if that guy gets elected. No. What are you going to tell the families of the people who he might end up actually murdering? What are you going to tell them? Oh, my bad. Hillary sucked too, so that was that. Well, no, even if Hillary Clinton sucks 3% less than Donald Trump, my view of it, you may or may not agree, is I'm not going to take that chance. And now, again, I admit it, I'm not doing the heavy lifting here because I'm in a blue state, so I don't have to do it. I'm just saying if I was in Ohio or Florida or a swing state, I would do it. He says he's going to torture. He's doubled down on that. He's tripled down on it. He said he's going to bring back worse than waterboarding. He said he's going to torture, quote, even if it doesn't work, which is another extra level of sadistic and terroristic and grotesque. He said, of course, he's going to kick out all over 11 million undocumented immigrants. That's madness. I mean, are you kidding me with the effects on the economy if you do something like that? I mean, that's just a – that's like a childish idea. He hasn't thought through these things, and he also just doesn't care. He is pretty openly xenophobic and bigoted. He says, of course, he's going to ban all Muslims. This is something he's slightly backpedaled from, but I don't want to risk that he's going to ban all Muslims from entering the country. I think that's crazy. Look at his economic plan. He adds trillions of dollars to the debt. Now, this is something that's hilarious because he says, I'm going to balance the budget. Meanwhile, when experts and economists go through his plans, his tax proposals, they go, oh, no, you're going to add trillions to it. So he doesn't know what he's doing on that front. He has no clue what he's doing. And, of course, he doesn't believe in climate change, and he's not going to do anything to stop it. In fact, he's going to go in the opposite direction, and he's going to exacerbate it because he says he wants to, you know, do more with coal and natural gas and all these things here. Now, again, Hillary's way worse than Bernie on that front because Bernie wants to treat it like a World War II-level threat. But you have Hillary Clinton who says, I'm not going to back out of the Paris Agreement. That's crazy. Donald says, I'm going to rip that fucking thing up. There are real differences. Hillary is fucking massively, tremendously, to steal from Donald Trump, evil. But Donald Trump is more evil. So my overall take on Bernie or bust is literally exactly where Bernie Sanders is on this issue. You can't get mad at the Bernie or bust people. I'm not mad at you at all, man. In fact, I like all of you, okay? I love the Bernie or bust people. I think they make the best policy arguments. Can't get mad at them. You can't put this at their feet. You just can't do it. If you blame anyone, you blame Hillary. And like Bernie says, it's not – he can't snap his finger and make all of them change their mind or agree with his reasoning. So to put it on his doorstep just makes less than no sense. So you can't blame them. You can't get mad at them. All you could tell them is what you plan on doing, and I just broke it down for you guys what I plan on doing. And as I've said all along, I'm a 50-50 Bernie or bust guy. I would say don't vote for her if you live in a deep blue state or a deep red state, and there should be some punishment for her not being pure enough. And outside of that, would I say, fuck it, let's have risk it and have Donald Trump get elected? No. And I'm not giving you advice either. Let's understand that. I'm saying if I was in Ohio or Florida or a swing state, I would go vote for her, understanding I'm voting for the lesser of two evils. So that's my general breakdown. Hopefully it's helpful. Maybe it's not helpful. I really have no idea. But there you have it. Okay. All right. I'm going to take a break here. When we come back, violence broke out at Trump rallies at the end of last week. We're going to talk about that. Then Muhammad Ali, man. Oh, my goodness. Muhammad Ali. So sad to lose such a great champ in many ways, not just when it comes to boxing. I'm stressing that point because it's super important to stress that point. I mean, I'm going to give you some specifics on his life that you may not know, and you're going to have so much respect for him walking away from it. All right. Stay right there, guys. We'll be right back. Thank you. All right, we're back, y'all. Here's the deal. I can't help. Every time I look in this monitor, Ponce de Leon. I'm not even sure what that guy looks like, but that's who I look like. Does that make any sense? Yeah, I'm forcing myself to look him up now. God damn it, Kyle. Ponce de Leon. See what that guy's facial hair looks like. Oh, totally. That's who I look like. 100%. Yeah. Kind of got like a little bit of a man-child beard thing going on. That's me. Yeah, that's me. I'm in the early stages of the Ponce de Leon beard. I can't get over this thing. And as I know I'm talking about it every 23 seconds, but it's totally birthed out of laziness. Like every time I'm like, all right, today's the day, we're shaving. Oh, I guess not. That's what ends up happening. All right. Violence at Trump rallies. Let's cover this. Some violence broke out at a Trump rally in San Jose at the end of last week. Let's watch. So a woman who had eggs thrown at her is on the verge of tears. Guy got sucker punched walking away.
Yeah, he should be good. You didn't say anything to anybody? You were just walking out?
I was walking out with a Trump sign, and he grabbed my Trump sign and started following me. Then I was like a racist.
Yeah, but you literally didn't say anything to promote
them. I was just like, yeah, Trump.
Now people just straight up scrapping in the streets here. So this is one of those instances where it becomes sadly obvious to me that many people who are anti-Trump don't understand free speech and free expression as much as Trump doesn't understand free speech and free expression. So Donald Trump sued Bill Maher because Bill Maher made a joke about how he looks like an orangutan. He also sued The Onion for a satire article. So this is a guy who is the PC police. This is a guy who doesn't understand free speech and free expression. He literally said, if I get elected, we're going to open up the libel laws so we can crack down on the press if they write these dishonest stories. Right, Donald. It's just anybody who would disagree with you, you would crack down like you're Erdogan. You're America's Erdogan. So he doesn't understand free speech and free expression, but these people do not either. So let me educate these so-called liberals on America. America is a place where we had a Supreme Court case where the KKK marched through a town called Skokie. A town that was a largely minority town. I'm not sure if it was predominantly Jewish or predominantly African-American, but the KKK said, here's what we're going to do. We're going to do a peaceful rally through the center of this town. Now, who defended the KKK in that case? I hope you're sitting down. The ACLU, the American Civil Liberties Union. And they said very clearly, look, I can't stand these guys. These guys are terrible. They're a group that does not represent us in any way, shape, or form. But they have a right to express horrific opinions. You could be as racist, as xenophobic, as bigoted as you want. And a true progressive, a true liberal says, I do not agree with what you're saying, but I will defend to the death your right to say it. So that's America. America is a place where we hear all opinions, no matter how grotesque. You're allowed to deny the fucking Holocaust. That's illegal in some places in Europe. You're allowed to deny the Holocaust in the U.S., and guess what? We're right to allow people to do that. So when you make the argument, oh, my God, Donald Trump is a fascist, Donald Trump is a horrible person, look at what he's saying. He's saying ban all Muslims. He's saying kick out over 11 million undocumented immigrants. Oh, my God, that's so horrible. Yeah, I agree with you. All that is true. So now as a result of this, I'm going to throw eggs at his supporters, and I'm going to punch people, sucker punch people, and they're going to bleed, and I'm going to attack Trump supporters. No. Now you're the asshole. You're the bad guy. You're the person that's wrong. Look, the whole idea, man, why the fuck do you think I became a liberal, I became a progressive, is that these are the people who are supposed to be principled and are supposed to be consistent. They're the people who say, no, I don't agree with violence. So that means I don't agree with violence. The only reservation I have for that is self-defense. Does it look like that poor woman who got eggs thrown at her, like she was on the verge of punching somebody in the face and somebody threw an egg at her? No, it was an offensive action. The guy was literally walking away and he got sucker punched from the back. You are doing an offensive, violent action there, which means you are the bad guy. You don't get to say, hey, my ideology is so much better because so as a result of that, I get to do violence in the name of my ideology. That is the biggest contradiction ever. That means you're not a liberal. That means you are not a liberal. This is the oldest trick in the book. I'm so right, I'm so just, I'm so moral that I get to do violence against those bad people. No, but the violence in and of itself is a negative thing. Do you understand that? So, look, man, I've always been, and I've argued for this from day one, I'm Team MLK. Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. says nonviolent resistance. Again, if we're talking about a war and it's literal self-defense, that's a different thing, and that's the one instance where violence is okay, self-defense. But outside of that context, you keep the moral high ground if you do nonviolent resistance. Because you get to say, I'm not stooping down to their level, and I'm the good guy because my actions prove that I'm the good guy. And then, in the future, you look back and, I mean, look at what happened in Alabama. Look at what happened all around the South. You have these innocent, poor black people who are saying, and just liberals in general, who were marching, and they get the dogs, sent to them, and the dogs are biting them. You get the fire hoses turned on them. And now we look back and we go, oh, my God, it was so utterly obvious who was right. The people who said we just want equal rights and the people who were willing to get their asses beat for freedom. Look at the optics of this. Nobody's going to look back at these events and say, oh, those liberals were right. No, they're going to go, it's funny. I thought Donald Trump was the thug, but then you have people who are beating the shit out of innocent Donald Trump supporters. Well, they look like the thugs. So keep the moral high ground, man. Keep the moral high ground. And look, I get it. So some people have made the argument that you need both in order to get change. So there's the idea of, well, you needed Malcolm X, who was much more militant. To be fair, he said, we only do violence in self-defense. But the group, the Nation of Islam, was much more militant in their approach. And you need MLK. You need that mix so that people can turn to the more reasonable one and say, okay, we give up. What do you want? That's Mandela. Riots in the streets, people going crazy, and then they go, all right, we need some sort of deal. Who do we go to? Mandela. He's the guy who we can talk to. People say you need both. But my concern is, look, I mean, you're giving them more sympathy, and rightly so. You're making people go, is Trump the bad one? Look at how the liberals here are acting. So I think you're actually helping them when you act like this. You might think, oh, I'm the bravest, and I'm just standing up against this. But no, since your actions and your techniques were immoral and unethical on their own merits, well, you just made it so otherwise normal people, good people, go, I can't go with you there. You can't throw eggs at innocent women. Now they're on the verge of tears. You can't sucker punch a Trump supporter because you don't like his opinions. So I think you're actually helping them by doing this. And, the argument, if that argument is true, that you need both. You need the violent people, you need the peaceful people in order to get change, to scare the establishment and then to give the establishment somebody to deal with. If that is true, which it may or may not be, I don't know, well then wouldn't the kind of violence that would be done by the more militant protesters, wouldn't that more be, for example, property damage? Because, there's more of a moral argument for that. Like, Noam Chomsky has said in the past that if somebody were to blow up some sort of military weaponry or material and no innocent civilians were killed, but you just blow that up. There's a much better moral argument for that than attacking innocent civilians who happen to have a shitty ideology and follow a thug fascist. So don't become the bad guy. Don't become the devil you're trying to avoid. Because when you start doing violence, there's no end to that. Maybe that slippery slope, that line keeps moving. So, hey, you know, this time it was fine for me to do violence against people who I consider fascists and who have a genuinely bad ideology. You know, maybe at some point it becomes okay for you to do violence against other liberals who might not agree with you 100%. Once you open that door to violence, where does it end? Who knows? That once you get rid of that bright red moral line, well, then all of a sudden, you know, it's a free-for-all, and it's a matter of opinion. Well, I don't know, censor everybody I disagree with, do violence against people for minor disagreements, and then you're just the bad guy. So keep the moral high ground. Do the right thing. I'm in favor of protest, man. Go protest. Go drown them out. Fucking shout as loud as you want. But it needs to be nonviolent. It needs to be civil disobedience, because that's the only kind, in my view, that always allows us to say every step of the way, we are so obviously right, they are so obviously wrong. Look at what they say and what they do, and look at what we say and do. We're consistent on the side of peace, on the side of freedom. They're not. Okay. Okay, now. Talk a little bit about Muhammad Ali. Not a little bit, a lot of bit. How about that? Muhammad Ali passed away this weekend at the age of 74. He, of course, had Parkinson's for a long time now, but he passed away from septic shock after having some respiratory issues. He was admitted to the hospital. Some headlines early on said he's in fair condition, but then seemingly out of nowhere like that, a few hours later, he had passed away. So Muhammad Ali, of course, wasn't just a boxer, but he was a cultural icon, and he was an activist. He won the heavyweight title in 1964, 1974, and 78. He won a gold medal at the Olympics as a teenager, but he was also a literal hero in more ways than one. So, for example, in 1981, this is incredible, he successfully talked a man out of committing suicide, and we have video of it.
But Muhammad Ali was never your garden variety champion of all the world. Yesterday in Los Angeles, he responded like a superhero when a distraught man threatened suicide. Gary Drinkwater reports. From a ledge 9 floors above Wilshire Boulevard, the hooded man shouted, "I'm no good. I'm going to jump. The Viet Cong are coming at me." Police, a psychologist, and a minister had all but given up trying to change the despondent man's mind when Muhammad Ali, who happened to be nearby, volunteered to talk to him. The former heavyweight champion went to a window and reportedly yelled, "I'm your brother. I want to help you." Recognizing Ali, the man finally opened the fire escape door, and Ali approached him on the ledge. It was a very tense 20 minutes. Several times it looked as though Ali was going to fail. Then, suddenly, it was all over. The man, Ali said later, began to weep. He was taken to the psychiatric ward of a veterans hospital. The former champ promised to visit him there later this week.
So that's something I had no clue about until recently. He was also, needless to say, just incredibly witty and wise. He has some quotes here that are honestly some of my favorite of all time. For example, "If you even dream of beating me, you better wake up and apologize." That's such an Ali quote. "I'm so mean, I make medicine sick." There's the classic "float like a butterfly, sting like a bee." People know that. Another one I saw recently was, "It's not bragging if you can back it up." Okay, that's something I've heard before, and these are just things that people say now, but I didn't even know that was Ali who originally said it or said some version of it. "If they can make penicillin out of moldy bread, they can sure make something out of you." Oh, there's such a deep truth in there. Come on. Oh, that's so true. Like, people, and this is, people feel like that in their lives, man. They feel like, fuck, I haven't become anything. I'm wasting my time. I'm doing this. I'm doing that. He's like, dude, they can make penicillin out of moldy bread. They could definitely make something out of you. All right, more. Only a man who knows what it is like to be defeated can reach down to the bottom of his soul and come up with the extra ounce of power it takes to win when the match is even. More, the fight is won or lost far away from witnesses, behind the lines, in the gym, and out there on the road, long before I dance under those lights. Preparation, preparation, practice, practice. You bust your ass, you work hard. People don't even know the fight is won long before you go out there and actually fight. And finally, I hated every minute of training, but I said, don't quit. Suffer now and live the rest of your life as a champion. That's also incredible because that's like a legendary thing to think. Like, as you're going through all the pain and suffering during training, you think to yourself, well, hold on now. If I really just take the suffering now, I'll reap the rewards later. When I feel like an absolute hero and champion the rest of my life, knowing that I put in the work. And, of course, one of the most incredible parts of Ali's legacy is his principled stand against Vietnam. In 1966, he refused to be inducted into the Army, so he was systematically denied a boxing license in every single state, and he was also stripped of his passport so he couldn't go overseas and fight. And he lost 3 years of his career in his prime. Unbelievable robbery. He was convicted of draft evasion and sentenced to 5 years in prison and a $10,000 fine. And he appealed all the way to the Supreme Court, and in 1971, he won the case. He won the case. Again, this is an incredible story. A lot of people don't even know this. So he was a conscientious objector, and he said, okay, understand that this is my interpretation of my Muslim faith doesn't allow me to kill innocent people and go fight in this war. So I'm not going to do it. And he never, ever wavered from that. In fact, we have some incredible video here of some comments that he made about why he just wouldn't fight in Vietnam.
My counsels will let me go shoot my brother, some darker people, some poor hungry people in the mud, some big powerful America, and shoot them for what? They never called me nigger. They never lynched me. They never put no dogs on me. They never robbed me of my nationality. Rape and kill my mother and father. Well, shoot them for what? How am I going to shoot them? Little, little poor little black people, little babies and children and women. How am I shoot them poor people? Just take me to jail.
Understand that that was absolutely positively unheard of at the time. I mean, here you have a black man in the 1960s and the 1970s telling the all-powerful United States government to fuck off. Oh, you want me to go kill people for you? How about no? You know, there are times he went into even more detail. You know, he spoke about how we don't even have rights here. We don't have full rights here. You know, I mean, this is somebody, he was in the segregated South many times. He'd been refused service. He's like, let me get this straight. You want me to go fight and maybe die and kill people who never do anything to me? He didn't do any offensive attack against this country or anything. You want me to go fight and then come back to this system which doesn't even treat me as human? Oh, that's cute. And then he honestly became a voice. I mean, this guy was a voice for so many people in the country who said, no, there's no logic to that. I fucking hate that. So I'm going to be a conscientious objector, and I'm going to tell you, absolutely not. I'm not going to do it. I'm not going to do it. And he was right. He was right not to do it. I mean, Vietnam, an offensive war which killed minimum 1 million civilians. We napalmed. We used all these disgusting chemical weapons and the like on women and children. This is what we learned in the Pentagon Papers when they released. Muhammad Ali said, I'm not going to do that. And then today you have hilariously stupid far-right conservatives
who try to argue, yeah, well, why not say people like, you know, Nugent and Cheney, why not give them the credit?
Because they are chicken hawks. They were for the war, but they're like, oh, my God, I can't go. I have these medical things.
Please don't send me. I'm such a bitch.
Nothing alike. One person taking a principled stand against the war for moral reasons. The other people believing in the massacre of innocent people and saying, I'd love to go, but I don't know, I got this thing. Nugent literally shit himself to get out of the war. I mean, you want to talk about a bitch. There's no comparison between the two. One is a hero, the other are assholes. And then, finally, I'll leave you with this. He actually wrote a piece on how he'd like to be remembered, and he said the following. I would like to be remembered as a man who won the heavyweight title 3 times, who was humorous and who treated everyone right, as a man who never looked down on those who looked up to him and who helped as many people as he could, as a man who stood up for his beliefs no matter what, as a man who tried to unite all humankind through faith and love. And if all that's too much, then I guess I'd settle for being remembered only as a great boxer who became a leader and a champion of his people. And I wouldn't even mind if folks forgot how pretty I was. Ali is going to be remembered as that and much more. This was a guy who also negotiated a deal with Saddam Hussein at one point. It was after Kuwait, and there were prisoners that he had. He negotiated a deal to release them. Apparently, one of the reporters who was in captivity in Iran came out after his death and said, pretty sure that he was one of the people who got me out. He was instrumental in facilitating my release by telling the Iranian government, come on now, you got to let him go. So believe me when I say he's way, way more than a boxer. He's also a hero. He's also an activist. He's also a cultural icon. And he was the greatest. Okay. All right, let me do one more quick one, and then we'll take our final break here. So when Donald Trump proposed a ban on all Muslims entering the U.S., Obama responded to that by saying, that's ludicrous. I can't believe you would propose something like that. And one of his points was, dude, many of our heroes are Muslims. So how can you say that? Well, Trump didn't like that very much, so he took to Twitter and he said the following. Obama said in his speech that Muslims are our sports heroes. What sport is he talking about and who? Is Obama profiling? Well, after the terrible news we got that Muhammad Ali passed away, Trump tweeted, Muhammad Ali is dead at 74, a truly great champion and a wonderful guy. He will be missed by all. Well, whoopsies, of course, Muhammad Ali is Muslim. I don't know if you could tell by the name or not. He's Muslim. So let me give you some of Ali's quotes here on his faith. He said, I am a Muslim, and there is nothing Islamic about killing innocent people in Paris, San Bernardino, or anywhere else in the world. True Muslims know that the ruthless violence of so-called Islamic jihadists goes against the very tenets of our religion. And then responding to Donald Trump's Muslim ban specifically, he said, speaking as someone who has never been accused of political correctness, I believe that our political leaders should use their position to bring understanding about the religion of Islam and clarify that these misguided murderers have perverted people's views on what Islam really is. So, look, and is it fair to disagree with Muhammad Ali on his interpretation of Islam? Oh, absolutely. There's no question about it. But what is not fair is to take the Trump position, which is, we need to ban all Muslims from entering the U.S. because all Muslims subscribe to a toxic version of the faith. Well, Muhammad Ali was living proof that that indeed is not true, that he speaks for many, many, many Muslims, to steal from Trump, many, many, tremendous number of Muslims. He speaks for many of them when he says hey, look, my interpretation of my faith is that we're here to use it for peace and towards justice and towards all these different things. So, again, you can disagree with his interpretation of the faith. That's fair. But you can't say that people who believe in his version of the faith don't exist. They do. And you can't say that Trump saying, let's ban all Muslims from entering the U.S. isn't generalizing. It indeed is. And he also is just a clear, utter hypocrite, and he contradicts himself like nobody else. Who's he talking about? Muslim sports heroes? What do you mean? That's who are you talking about? Muhammad Ali passed away. What a great hero and champion, everybody. Yeah, I think you just, right there, pal. So, and then the other takeaway from this is, very simply, dude, Donald Trump means Arabs, and he means people of Middle Eastern descent and South Asians, people with that skin tone. Those are the people he doesn't want coming into the U.S. So people often say, well, look, being anti-Muslim or being anti-Islam, that's not, of course that's not racism. Literally, they're right. That isn't racism. Islam isn't a race. That's it. Period. But in the mind of an idiot like Donald Trump, who probably doesn't even know that Indonesia is the most populous Muslim country on the planet, when he thinks of Muslim, he thinks of somebody who looks Arabic or South Asian, that kind of skin tone. So he says, I want to keep those people out. In his mind, he means a specific skin tone. So his version of it, oh, it's certainly at the very least xenophobic or bigoted, because again, he says keep out all Muslims from entering the U.S., but more likely just racist, because again, he probably isn't bright enough to really stop and think about it and realize that there are many Muslims who indeed are not of that variety and that skin tone where you look like you're from the Middle East. Okay. Let's take a break. When we come back, I got more Trump silliness. He was having some fun on Twitter, and he stepped in a giant pile of shit. And then Cenk Uygur, the Young Turks, goes on CNN and destroys a toddler host who I feel bad for. All right, stay right there, guys. We'll be right back.
$1,000 when I get my tip on. I'm all first. Next to Eva Fatty, when she said I saw her. Just got her with the happy fill, I'm about to spoil.
children?
Should I give you more more anecdotes about my ridiculous facial hair? I'm not gonna do it. I'll spare you. I'll spare you. I already played the greatest hits. Squirrel on my face, Ponce de Leon. That's genius material. All right. Donald Trump. It's such a ridiculous story. So over the weekend, Donald Trump was having some fun on Twitter, as he usually does, and he retweeted this. This is DonVito08 tweeted this out. Says, thank you, Mr. Trump, for standing up for our country. Hashtag VoteTrump2016. Join me on the Trump train. And then there's a picture here. You have a black family, and it says, American Families for Trump. We need a common sense president. So the people at BuzzFeed, and I believe the people at Mediaite and some others, by the way, including myself, I did this separately too before any of the articles were released. They decided, that's a little curious. Let's look into it. Now, what tipped me off is that the name of the account is DonVito08. DonVito. Has there ever been a more obvious, just super-duper Italian name? And there's this picture of a black family. So, okay, that's a little interesting. That's a little weird. And also, just black Trump supporters in general. All eight of you, I'm sure, are great people, but there's eight of you. So people looked into it, and it turns out they're not Trump supporters. That picture was jacked from a local news report on a family reunion in the Midwest. Oh, that's the saddest thing I've ever seen. They just fished for a black family online, put it there, made a meme out of it, and tweeted it. Well, the story gets even better. It's also one of the first images that comes up when you type black family into Google. Dude, stone cold busted. That's so sad. That's so sad. And then when you go through the rest of Don Vito's tweets, it's like all memes, and they all have similar pictures like that. And some of them are Spanish families, some of them are black families, and he just tries all these different ones and tweets them out at him, hoping that, you know, he'll get a retweet. And then it hit me. Oh, of course. The guy's almost certainly a staffer for Donald Trump. Like, remember, we covered the story where Hillary Clinton and Correct the Record, ironically named, they spent over $1 million to buy online trolls to take any time anybody says something negative about Hillary, respond. So Hillary did it. Oh, there's almost no doubt about it that Donald Trump did it too. The only person who I think wouldn't do it would be Bernie Sanders. He actually has a lot of genuine support. Not to say that some of the people who like Trump aren't passionate, but there's very few black Trump supporters, and of those who are black Trump supporters, many of them, I'm sure, are in the closet. The rest of the black community isn't going to be too fond of you if you say, yeah, Trump 2016, common sense. Really? Common sense? That's what you're going to say? So almost certainly the case that this is a paid Trump account, that he's a staffer for Trump and he tweets out all these memes and stuff. And understand, guys, so again, it is true that Trump does have, obviously, he's got strong grassroots support. But that wasn't always the case. Donald Trump is almost a textbook example of fake it until you make it. Because remember, we covered the story when he launched his campaign, how they hired like an agency to send in fake supporters. They literally, as people walked in, they would hand them signs that they made, that they would try to pawn off as like, oh, this is a fan of Trump who made the sign. And they would hold it up. And Trump was on stage, this fucking goofball of all goofballs. According to reporters, there were dozens of people there, just dozens. But what did he do? He took the stage. He goes, oh, this is great. Thousands of you here. Thousands of people supporting Trump. The reporters were like, dude, there's like dozens of people here. There's not even 100 people here. What are you saying? So he started out just faking it. It was just absolutely faking it. Pay people to support, do, you know, the AstroTurf support, as they call it. I'm sure accounts like this throughout his time, fake. And then eventually there's enough idiots in the country who are like, oh, no, totally, I agree with that, and fuck the Mexicans. So they're like, okay, yeah, I'll join up with this guy. And then his fake support became real support. Donald Trump. It turns out everything about him and his campaign on some level is as real as the color of his skin or his hair. Okay. Now we shoot on over to CNN here. Cenk Uygur of the Young Turks went on Reliable Sources on CNN with Brian Stelter to discuss media bias against Bernie Sanders. Let's watch some of it here.
The superdelegates are largely on Clinton's side, and they're probably not going to move based on the interviews we've done with them. Why is it wrong for the media to acknowledge that on Tuesday night?
Because they aren't facts at all. So first, let's just acknowledge what are actual facts, that the superdelegates do not vote until the convention. In fact, if they're not at the convention, their votes won't get counted at all.
But the superdelegates are the establishment. They're all establishment people, and they're all voting for Clinton, only 46 for Sanders.
Now, Brian... you guys, and I mean CNN and all of the establishment press, totally tilted the playing field here from day one by counting those superdelegates, when in fact you know the superdelegates do switch their votes all the time. They switched it in 2008. Hillary Clinton had a 100 superdelegate lead, which completely vanished in 2008. So
was
why did you
wrong
count it from day one, which was absolutely incorrect? It was, in fact, journalistic malpractice. Why did you guys do that?
You're saying more information is not a good thing. We should hide people from the reality of what the superdelegates are
saying. No. Brian, this is very important. If you say, hey, superdelegates are likely to vote this way, or they say they're voting this way, as an aside, that's perfectly fair. But if you count them in the official tally, when you know they can and often do switch their votes and have not voted yet, that is simply incorrect. That is not a fact. That is the opposite of a fact.
Pretty sure Brian Stelter broke a rib there. Pretty sure. Okay, that's inarguable. So I was fucking losing my mind over this from early on in the race. There are a lot of Bernie supporters who felt exactly the same way. But they would show on CNN, very clearly, they'd say delegates, the delegate count, and they would have the superdelegates in there. Now, later on, after people piled on, they didn't get rid of the superdelegates, but they would show it in two separate ways. So first they would show it with the delegates, the superdelegates in there, and then they would show the separate one where they would just show the pledge delegates. But the way the delegates you should be showing every step of the way here, especially early on in the race, what you should be showing is no superdelegates. No superdelegates. Because, like he mentioned, superdelegates don't vote until the convention. And also, they're undemocratic by their nature. So since they have the ability and the option to change at the convention, to say, hey, as of right now, X number of superdelegates support Hillary versus Bernie, what you're doing is, since Hillary has so many more superdelegates, you're actually skewing the total delegate count, skewing the reality of the situation, making it seem like Hillary has an insurmountable lead from early on, and as a result of that, that actually suppresses the vote for Bernie supporters. Now, again, you might say, well, Kyle, that's an opinion. How do you know that for sure? No, it's actually a well-known phenomenon called the bandwagon effect, where people feel, don't ask me why, I think it's fucking crazy that people eventually say, oh, this person's winning, I'll go vote for this person. But there's some percentage of supporters that go, oh, it looks like it's insurmountable, looks like she's going to win, so if anything, more people go out to vote for her and fewer people go out to vote for Bernie. It disheartens people who are Bernie supporters. They did that from the very beginning. That wasn't a mistake. That wasn't a mistake. Just like CNN, for example, during the debates, what they would show the polls. They used to put the polls up. And Bernie Sanders would absolutely eviscerate her in every poll after every debate, sometimes winning 90% of the vote. Well, when it became too embarrassing for Hillary Clinton, because those are facts, they stopped showing the polls. They pulled some down from their website. I mean, this is insane bias. Insane bias. And then they do it with the superdelegates. She has 8 zillion superdelegates. He has -3. Put that up in the count. Make it seem like that's already the case. That's not the case because the superdelegates don't vote until the convention. They do not vote until the convention. Don't put them up there. Don't put them up there. And as because you're making people think that's already the vote tally. It's not. They don't count till the convention, and oftentimes they switch. They can switch based off extenuating circumstances. Okay. They're not done going back and forth yet. Let's watch more.
The Hillary delegate switched because Obama was going to win. In this case, we know the superdelegates are establishment figures, they're former governors and people like that, that are clearly pro-Clinton. Nothing's going to happen that's going to change their mind.
Again, not true. So, Brian, you say nothing's going to happen.
What's going to happen? Tell me.
I can tell you exactly what could happen.
Are you wishing for an indictment?
Are for extraordinary, hold on. They are for extraordinary circumstances. You know what would be extraordinary? If one of the candidates were indicted, of course.
Mm-hmm.
So you guys keep assuming there'll be no indictment. And Brian, I hear you have reliable sources. So tell me, do you have any sources inside the FBI or the State Department that have already told you that she is not going to get indicted? Because that would be news.
I do not. I cover media, not the FBI. But the indications at the moment are that she hasn't been interviewed by the FBI. I hear what you're saying about the indictment, but other than that, it seems to me you're misleading your audience, giving them more hope than they should actually have.
Okay, he just took the reality and flipped it on its head yet again. No, what he's trying to explain to you is you haven't been accurate all along. You have biased it in favor of Hillary Clinton. And when you say something like you just did, like, quote, nothing is going to happen that can change their mind, talking about the superdelegates, you made that up. Now, if Brian Stelter were to say, it is likely or overwhelmingly likely that nothing will happen that will make them change their mind, that's fine. That's a different statement. I totally agree with him. In fact, I'd be out here defending him and not defending Cenk if he had said, it is likely the case that Hillary Clinton becomes a nominee after New Jersey or whatever. If you frame it in with probability in there, likely, words like that, that's a different thing. But when you come out there and say, we are going to declare the race for Hillary after New Jersey, when that's not true because the superdelegates haven't voted yet, and you say nothing is going to happen that can change their mind, that is false. That's not accurate. Because as Cenk rightly points out, he says, hey, she's under FBI investigation. I went through all the details of this email scandal for you guys, and there is something there. She is hiding something. There's no question about that. Whether or not there'll be an indictment is a separate question, but we know there's an investigation going on right now. If there's an indictment before the general election, it would be absolutely unbelievable and mind-blowing and preposterous for the superdelegates to say, we're still going to push through the person who just got indicted. Dude, you can't run the country from a jail cell. Now, we're talking about, you know, civil issues here. There are separate criminal issues. We don't need to get into all the details of the different cases. But if you have somebody who's under FBI investigation, I mean, imagine if the roles were reversed and it was Bernie Sanders under FBI investigation, and it was Hillary Clinton in Bernie Sanders' position today. What would the calls be? I think, honestly, just the fact that there is an investigation, the media would say, this is irresponsible you to still be in the race. You got to get the fuck out. Even though you're leading, there's an FBI investigation on you. I mean, are you really going to risk a Trump presidency because of your narcissism? Because you want to be president so much? You're that selfish? They're willing to risk turning the country over to Donald Trump because you can't understand that you're a flawed candidate because you're under FBI investigation. Everybody would scream at Bernie to drop out if he was under FBI investigation. When it's Hillary, it's not even mentioned. It's not even mentioned. And then also, Stelter is just disregarding other arguments that Bernie can make at the convention. So, for example, Bernie can say, hey, this entire process was wrong from the beginning and not rigged but leaned Hillary from the beginning because, for example, so many primaries were closed. Closed primaries favor her. When you don't allow independents to vote, it's more likely to go to her. Well, when you allow independents to vote, it's way more likely to go to me. And guess who you need in a general election to win? Independence. So he can argue, hey, these closed primaries tip the scale in her favor, so she has the ability to get through a primary but a much less lower chance to win the general election. And then that leads me into the next point he can make to the superdelegates. Look at the polls. In the most recent poll, Bernie Sanders beats Donald Trump by 15 points in a general election. Hillary Clinton loses by 2. That's unbelievable. To overlook that is madness. And even when you go to the average, so somebody can say, well, that's just the most recent polls. That's one poll. It could be an outlier, yada, yada. No. In the average, Bernie's up by 10.4 percentage points over Trump in a general. Hillary's up by 1.4%, which is basically a statistical tie. No. No. No, 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 no. These are arguments he can make. Now, it probably won't work if he just uses those arguments. If there's no indictment, it certainly won't work. But he has the ability to make that argument. And if you call the race before then, you're yet again rigging it further in favor of Hillary, as you've done from the beginning when you put the superdelegates on screen when you shouldn't have and made her look like she had an insurmountable lead. You're going to call it too soon if you do what you want to do, and that again will not be true, and you'll be making an ass of yourself, as you accuse the Young Turks of misleading their audience, you mislead your audience. I got one more clip for you.
Frankly, this is really exciting to say. For the first time in the history of this country, we're going to have a female nominee of a major party. I don't care if you're Republican or Democrat or Libertarian. That's something this country should note and acknowledge. And don't you think it's a shame that the Bernie Sanders talk is going to overshadow what we can all agree is a historic milestone?
I mean, look at the framing you just gave it, right? So I think Hillary Clinton is a completely pro-establishment candidate that will continue this corrupt system where private interests
finance
elections.
So what about the historic milestone?
And so, but instead of looking at it as, hey, wait a minute, one guy hasn't taken that corrupting money and the other one has, you frame it as male versus female and hence put me in a position where I'm forced to say, no, I don't think it would be historic because I think it's the same old establishment, whether it's a male, a female, or anything else. So the framing is all biased. And I'm not saying that because I think that you're liberal or you're conservative, you're pro-Hillary or not. It's just the establishment told us from day one, the superdelegates have already voted when they did not, and you tell us today that, hey, make sure you go away and you support the establishment candidate. The superdelegates vote at the convention. So for you guys to call it when you don't know what the circumstances are and those people have not voted yet, it is just simply incorrect. That is not journalism.
So you see what Stelter did there? When you get your ass handed to you on a silver platter every step of the way with every other point in the debate, at the end, he has nothing left. What card does he pull out? She's a woman. She's a woman! She's a woman! Jake, she's female. She has a vagina. Do you not like women? I guess that you're not in favor of women being president. So then the conversation becomes, hey, has the process been fair to Bernie Sanders? The answer is no. So you can't win on the substance in that debate. You pivot to, she's a woman. She's a woman. Historic. It's historic. So now you don't think it's historic. I guess you don't think it's historic. So you just change the conversation completely. And by the way, this is what I like to call McFeminism. It's feminism that's about as real as the meat and the chicken nuggets. It's, you know, hey, I will support a woman to the exclusion of everything else that should matter in a candidate, like policy substance. But by the way, test them on this, too. Because that's the argument he's making. Hey, she's a woman. She's a woman. Shouldn't we all be happy? Is that the argument that people would be making if it was Carly Fiorina, who was the nominee on the Republican side, versus Bernie Sanders on the Democratic side? Or versus Joe Biden, or versus any other Democratic candidate who's male? Hey, look, hey, she's a woman. She's a woman. Would Madeleine Albright still go out there and say there's a special place in hell for women who don't support women? Sarah Palin's the nominee. There's a special place in hell for women who don't support women. Now, please, support Sarah Palin over Joe Biden. Please, do it. No, if it was Michelle Bachmann, if it was Sarah Palin, if it was Carly Fiorina, all these preposterous arguments, I mean, if they're being consistent, they'd say, yes, I support them because they're women. Because they're women. And we can play the same card back on you, but we're actually intellectually honest, so we don't do that. But you want to play this game? Hey, are you anti-Semitic? Bernie Sanders would be the first Jewish American nominee. I guess you don't like Jews. I guess you don't want Jews to – I mean, that's historic. Wouldn't that be historic? I guess you don't think it's historic. Do you think it's historic? Say you think it's historic. You change the conversation. See what they did? I can't beat you on the substance, so she's a woman. Hey, woman card right here. Okay, well, he's Jewish. How about that? Are you an anti-Semite? I guess you might be an anti-Semite. So understand, man, the debate is – has the system, has the process been fair? Has the media been fair to Bernie Sanders? The answer to that is no. And when you say, hey, she's a woman, so leave it at that, dude, we all get it. We all want to have the first female president, but it needs to be the right one with the right policies. If it's Elizabeth Warren, I would knock people over running to the booth in order to vote for her. It's not Elizabeth Warren. And by the way, many people, including myself, I'm here in New York, I will likely be voting for Jill Stein in the general election, a woman. So you can't just pawn off, you know, the Bernie supporters. Oh, I guess they're all just sexist, as so many articles have, some that we've covered on this show. The main point is policy. Are you in favor of getting money out of politics? Are you in favor of universal health care? Are you in favor of universal education? Are you in favor of stopping our dumbass interventions and stopping the military-industrial complex? Either you meet those criteria or you don't. This is what Bernie supporters care about. The process has not been fair to Bernie all along, and stop trying to smear them and pulling out the woman card at the last second when they point out that obvious truth. Okay. All right, now, let's move along here. I got a lot to squeeze in, and I don't have much time left. New York Governor Andrew Cuomo signed an executive order over the weekend that orders the state of New York to pull financial aid from any company that supports the BDS movement. So for those of you who don't know, BDS is the Boycott, Divestment, and Sanctions Movement that tries to punish Israel economically for the occupation as opposed to militarily. So here's what Cuomo said. In New York, we lead by example. We are also a place of action. We want to take immediate action because we want Israel to know that we are on their side. If you boycott against Israel, New York will boycott you. So they're literally going to make a list of businesses that are condemned by the state of New York here, too. So keep that in mind. Cuomo continues. New York stands in solidarity with Israel today and always. This state will not stand for the politics of discrimination, irony, in any form. And we will continue to demonstrate our unwavering support for the people of Israel in the fight for freedom, again, irony, liberty and democracy. I'm proud to sign this nation's leading executive order, which will help protect Israel from the threat of divestment. This order sends the message that this state will do everything in its power to end this hateful, intolerant campaign. Again, massive irony. So, really, that's the point? That's the argument you're going to make? You couldn't come up with a more clever one? Oh, I'm so against discrimination that I'm going to discriminate against people who support BDS. What? No, see, BDS is an attempt to end the occupation, and they do it in the most moral way possible. So not by picking up a gun and going to kill people, but by saying, hey, we're going to put economic pressure on you to make it so that you feel like you have no choice because you're losing money. So you feel like you have no choice but to do a deal and to get a free and independent Palestinian state. But again, they flip the truth on its head.
Well, we're not going to stand for the politics of discrimination in any form.
Well, you have a weird way of showing that by discriminating against people who support BDS. This is just a form of political thought. And they're like, we're going to discriminate against that form of political thought. And then they say, well, look, we support people in Israel fighting for freedom, liberty, and democracy. It's an apartheid state. For fuck's sake, it's an apartheid state. Do you not understand that? Palestinians have lost their land. More and more of their land is getting taken. And Israel is occupying them militarily. You can't say you support freedom, liberty, and democracy as you're doing the antithesis of freedom, liberty, and democracy. And again, the irony of intolerant. We need to end this hateful, intolerant campaign. No, BDS is actually more for tolerance and to end hate. Because they're the ones who are saying, can we give Palestinians basic human rights? But again, they flip it on its head. And by the way, they also conflate people being anti-Zionism and against the occupation with anti-Semitism, a grotesque trick. Oh, you're somebody who wants a Palestinian state? You're somebody who wants a free and independent Palestine, and you want them to have their human rights? I guess you hate all Jews. That's ridiculous. That's just as stupid as the people who say, hey, if you criticize the doctrine of Islam, you hate all Muslims. That's not true. Stop fucking making it up and sidestepping because you can't win on the substance. So, This is only one of the clearest examples I've ever seen of a crackdown on free speech. And I think the overarching point here is you don't even have to agree with BDS to acknowledge that the government can't single out people for punishment based on their political beliefs. Imagine they did the same thing for any other state. If somebody called for a boycott of Iran and the government's like, oh, no, we're going to single you out and crack down on you. That would never happen. That would never happen. So this will go down as cheerleading apartheid. This is very similar to if there were some sort of ordinances passed in the U.S. back in the day when there was apartheid in South Africa, the crackdown of people who were trying to bring an end to apartheid in South Africa. So they are proudly on the wrong side of history. And just so you know why they're so panicked, we covered this in a story recently. 20 to 30% of companies in the West Bank in occupied territories are now gone. They're gone. Why? Because of BDS. They couldn't take the fact they were losing all this money. There was a lot of negative press against them. So they got out of the occupied territories, which is great. Now, some people don't like BDS because they say, hey, look, they want right to return. That means Israel doesn't exist. I actually agree with that criticism, that you're not going to get – they're asking for more than a two-state deal. But my response to that would be, that's how negotiations go. So you know what happens? People in Israel, in the Jewish Home Party and in the Likud Party, say, we want all the land. We want all the land. Okay, well, you shouldn't get it. So there are many people in Palestine who say, we want all the land. We want all the land. We don't even want the 1947 partition plan to remain. Okay, well, you're not going to get that either. So you know what we do? We get together. We get a deal. Most experts agree would be along the 1967 borders. You get a two-state deal, both international recognition. And voila, you have a peace deal. So, yeah, I don't agree with right to return. I agree with a two-state solution. But the way you get that, there's an old saying, you shoot for the stars, you may reach the moon. And let's face it, Israel right now has all the power. They have the world's largest military in human history backing them. So when they say we want all the land, that's a much bigger threat than the Palestinians, because Palestinians aren't nearly as powerful. So, because in theory, philosophically, they want back all the land that was stolen from them. That's nothing to blame them for. You can disagree with that position, but understand where it's coming from and understand that this is a step in a process towards a two-state deal. So both sides need to come together, need to get a two-state deal, but naturally Israel has been blocking that. The Netanyahu government has been blocking that. We know because you had the Palestinians propose through Jordan at the UN a two-state deal along 67 borders. Netanyahu just said, no, I'm not even going to consider that. So it's pretty clear at this point in time that the government, with all the power, has said, no, we don't want to do a deal. Okay, so if that's how you want to play the game, let's play the game. Boycott, divestment, and sanctions, we're going to hurt you economically until you agree to do the deal. And I would love it if the U.S. got on board with this, but of course they won't. And I would love it if they said, we're going to lift the veto at the U.N., and we're going to withhold billions of dollars in aid from you unless and until you do a two-state deal. You want the aid money back? You want our support again? Just do a two-state deal. If not, bye-bye. And then they do a deal. You got to make them do a deal because they're not going to do it willingly. And this is how you do it without resorting to violence. So in other words, this is how you do it and you keep the moral high ground. They're panicking because it's working. I'm out of time, guys, which is actually really sad because I'm nowhere near done. But anywho, I'll be back tomorrow. Much love. Mwah. Kisses, smooches. Everybody have a great rest of the day. Peace.